Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sport Intern Special, presented by me, Ashish Sharma. In this series of podcasts, we speak to the movers and shakers within the Olympic movement. In this episode, we catch up with Amanda Hudson, who's the Director of Education for the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. Recently, WADA held a global education conference in France, and Amanda began by telling me more about the importance of this conference.
This conference, the fourth edition, saw just over 400 people attend. And what was interesting compared to maybe the other conferences is the range of people that were here. So the humble practitioner like myself, who's busy trying to, you know, do the job. But equally, we had people who had a broader responsibility for anti-doping programs, of which maybe education was part of their portfolio. We had a number of people from governments, and also a lot of people from the sports movement, maybe because of the location and being in Europe. And genuinely, I think the message is now getting through that anti-doping will only be successful if we can balance our programs. You know, the detection deterrence model, which we've been operating for a number of years, is part of the solution, but it's not the only part of the solution. And we have to kind of rebalance our approach to anti-doping, and education is the other side of that coin.
One aspect that I found interesting as I was reading through some of the notes about the conference was about behavioral science. And that seems to be a very general sort of category. Can you give us a bit more detail in terms of how that particularly relates towards education in anti-doping, but also in terms of maybe doping offences and violations in the first place?
Sure. I think sometimes there's a misconception that, you know, athletes will wake up one day and think, today's the day. Today's the day I'm going to start doping. And equally, we also forget that athletes start in sport without an intention to dope. You know, we all start out in sport clean, as we would say. And so we're trying to understand what is it that's happening? What is making athletes vulnerable to doping? What is making athletes consider this as a possibility or a way to succeed in their sport? And when you take all of that into account, the influences, the environment, their coach's mentality, all these different factors, it boils down that actually doping is a behavior. It is something that people are choosing to do, and that behavior then is either being reinforced by the people around them and the environment, or a perception that if I have to do it because everybody else is doping. And so we're trying to take some lessons and information and research and learning from other industries who are also dealing with people and behavioral type problems. So you're right. Some of this is about, can we try and understand the behaviors and the factors that are influencing this behavior as to why some athletes choose to dope? From my perspective, I'm really interested in the prevention piece. So trying to get ahead of this problem. And can we equally understand the behaviors that an athlete needs to keep themselves clean? Because the anti-doping system is quite complex. You may have heard of the whereabouts system, where athletes have to tell us where they are all the time and use a complicated technology platform to do that and update. And these are behaviors. These are skills and behaviors that we can help athletes learn so that they don't face consequences, you know, unintentionally. If you want to take a medication, you need to actually be able to check the prohibited list and work out whether the medication you want to take contains any prohibited substances. So these are all skills and behaviors that actually our education programs need to be developing in athletes who are trying to do the right thing. And we've kind of come a little bit, I don't think I'm doing my industry a disservice, but we're coming a little bit from a place where education programs were very knowledge-based. here are the anti-doping rules, you need to know them, don't break them. It's not quite enough. You know, we really have to help these athletes live their day-to-day lives, training and competing with the skills they need to navigate the anti-doping system.
There's a lot of research being done in the field. There's a lot of sort of investment gone into that research as well. But there certainly, I would imagine, is a bridge between what is done in terms of theory and research and what is actually in practice, the reality.
And like most industries, that gap between research and practice exists, and it's very difficult to get the academic community to engage with the practical community and vice versa. There's a bit of fear about who these people are and what they want to do. We definitely acknowledge this gap and are trying to do something about it. We have a social science research strategy. Social science research fits under my remit. And that clearly sets out that we need to bring the academic community and practitioners together. Just before the Global Education Conference, and it's the first time we've tried this, we actually had a social science research symposium. We kept it small. We didn't know if there would be any interest. We had about 60 people, but we had to turn away another 60 people. And this is largely the academic community who are invested in social science research. But also we had some practitioners because we're starting to see research appear in people's jobs, which is a great sign that things are progressing. We run a grant program where we give out money for research to take place. And definitely one of the factors that we would look at when reviewing these applications is actually, are you doing this research in isolation or have you made friends with the National Anti-Doping Agency or the sports movement? And are you actually working in collaboration so that the research that you want to do is actually tailored to the situation, the country, the sport, so it can be used more readily? Because we certainly don't want to invest in research that ends up, you know, sat in a, published in a journal and is of no use to anyone.
And a lot of the focus was very much on the athletes. But from what you were saying, I just wonder whether a lot can also be focused on their entourage. How much emphasis is going into the people that are surrounding them, and what is the education structure that feeds them the information in terms of making the right decisions to help their athletes as they develop their career?
Yeah, I mean, without doubt, research has been and is still telling us that the entourage around the athletes are the ones who are influencing their decisions and their behaviours. And I have to say, most good anti-doping organisations will include the entourage in their education programmes. Some of the challenges we faced around the policy side is that that hasn't really been mandated. It's kind of been, please, can you? It would be a good idea if. What we are trying to do now, because we're in the period where we're reviewing our International Standard for Education, the policy tool that we have, and we see that tool as something positive. It can help evolve the way education is going. And definitely at the conference and from the Social Science Research Symposium, big discussions were held on, is now the time? Is now the time that we can be brave enough to say the entourage around the athlete, maybe not all athletes, but key athletes, now must be educated, mandated, because we have to recognise the research and we have to recognise the influence that athletes are having. And to give one concrete example, I mean, recent cases around minors have really shown us that we have to do more to protect them. So I'm hoping that in the new revision of this policy, we'll have something around the mandatory education of minor athletes, particularly those competing internationally, and their entourage. I mean, I think for me now, it's I keep saying it's 2024. We have to be brave and we have to do more.
But again, we come back to that issue, I suppose, of what you want and what is practical in reality. How is it enforced? Who carries it out? Who oversees it to make sure that it is there and it's being, I suppose, a practice that's carried out equally? So it's sort of not just, you know, predominant in one region and not in another.
Yeah, very good point. And being a global regulator, as WADA is, it's always a challenge to make sure that practice is the same across the world. Thankfully, when I joined, WADA, as you probably have seen, have been completely supportive of this rebalancing of the system and investment in education. And one of the key investments we've made is in a digital learning platform called Adele, where we have been able to create a number of e-learning programs for various audiences, parents of elite athletes, coaches, children, in terms of values-based education. And that's been critical for me, because before we ramp up policy requirements, I want to make sure that there's a no excuse environment. So if you can't do it yourself, no problem. I have something that you can use. So we try and provide solutions for the anti-doping community. That means don't worry so much about the policy requirements. We would rather you did your own thing. You know your country, you know your sport. But if for whatever reason, resource expertise, you can't, we have a reasonably good program that you can use, you know, within your environment. So making sure that our, I suppose, enabling role is pretty solid. So I want to make sure that if we ramp up the policy requirements, we have the tools in place. On the other end, we do have quite a comprehensive co-compliance program, which issues sort of a self-assessment questionnaire to every anti-doping organization across the world periodically. And we have the robust questions in there that, you know, we ask, what's your education program? What's your plan? Who are you targeting? What are you doing? What activities are you using? And tell us if it worked. You know, tell us the monitoring you're doing. Tell us the evaluation you're doing, and what improvements you might make the year after. So very important for me that success is at the heart of any policy changes we want to make. We have the tools in place. And we also have the compliance process to make sure that we can check on what's happening. And if things aren't happening, there are some quite serious consequences through the compliance process if signatories are not doing, you know, the policy requirements as intended.
And I suppose your biggest challenge starts now in a way, because you're going to be overseeing the whole review of this education standard policy, moving it ahead. And, you know, you're going to have all that data that's coming in from all the anti-doping associations and agencies worldwide. How do you work on that? How do you put all of that information together and decide on the next step? Because those next moments, those next phases are going to be important.
Yes, and unfortunately, the timeline of all of that is not as smooth as we would like. So we're currently doing the code compliance process on the current standard whilst we're trying to evolve the new standard. And then once that's coming into effect, we'll have a couple of years to rejig the compliance process so that it meets the, obviously, tests out the new standard. What's great about collecting all of this data is that we try and have a commitment to show back to the community that compliance also is a useful tool. It's not just something you have to complete. As a couple of examples, we know from 2017 to now, there's been about a 50% increase in the amount of education that's being done, whether it's being planned, the programs, values-based education, particularly at the younger age. So we have some evidence now that the policy tool can work in a positive way. We do have to be careful, though, that we don't want a compliance mindset, you know, teaching to the test back in my days in the UK. And that was a big focus of the conference, actually, is that if you're doing good stuff, the compliance will take care of itself. What we want is adopt a prevention mindset where you're really focused on your environment, your culture, your country, your athletes, the national teams going to the Olympics, and just doing what they need to support them, you know, on their journey. So the timeline isn't ideal, but the research is really our evidence base for any policy changes. And at that point, it's difficult to argue then with why we would make such changes. It's completely unfair that an athlete going to the Olympic Games, let's say their pinnacle, you know, event in their career, 10 years worth of training, and they are uneducated in the simplest things that could render them a four-year ban.
Those there were the thoughts of Amanda Hudson, the Director of Education for the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. Don't forget, you can get up to date with all the latest in the Olympic movement by subscribing to the Sport Intern newsletter produced every day, Monday to Friday. But until the next time, stay safe.